Subscribe to The Spectator this summer and get the next 10 weeks of the magazine, as well as unlimited access to our website and app for just £10. Not only that, we'll send you a bottle of PIMS absolutely free, only while stocks last. So go to www.spectator.co.uk/PIMS to claim this offer now.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and this is the Sunday Roundup. No one could argue that there hasn't been anything to talk about since the Sunday interview shows made their last appearance in July. The latest thorny issue to hit the headlines is the government's plan to reform the social care system and how it will be paid for. The Conservatives pledged not to raise the rate of national insurance back in 2019, but Andrew Marr challenged the Vaccines Minister Nadeem Zahawi to deny the newspaper reports that such a rise was on its way.
Should people be paying more tax to get better social care?
Well, we are absolutely committed to reforming the adult social care system.
Not my question. Should people be paying more tax?
Well, I will bring forward our proposals, and I'm very happy to come back on your programme when the details are published to discuss how we will pay for better and reformed adult social care. Now, it's worth remembering, Andrew, that we put £6 billion to help councils that is unring-fenced to include additional support for adult social care, plus the additional £2 billion specific funding to reduce transmission and bolster the workforce in social care. So, but we will take we'll work with national partners, with local partners, and those with lived experience of the social care sector to get this right, and get it right as we are determined to do.
So as a leading Conservative minister, you can't sit there and tell me we should not be raising taxes. You stood on a manifesto specifically promising not to raise VAT or income tax or national insurance. Are you going to break that promise you made to the voters?
Well, as I say, we're determined to reform the social care system. When we bring forward those proposals, I am more than happy to come back on your programme and explain how we're going to pay for that and explain the proposals.
Okay.
The important thing is not to try and sort of run ahead of ourselves on this interview, because no proposals have yet been published. It's only right that when we publish them, then we can come and discuss them on your show.
Trevor Phillips also interviewed Zahawi and asked him about the recent advice given by the Joint Committee on Vaccinations and Immunisations, which has argued against giving COVID vaccines to children aged between 12 and 15. However, the ultimate decision will lie with the UK's chief medical officers.
It looks a bit like what you've decided is you don't like their non-advice and you want some different advice quickly. Why is it necessary in that sense to have a decision out of the chief medical officers this week, which is what I understand you've asked for?
So, no, I think it's worth just reiterating that the JCVI have said that it is marginally more beneficial to vaccinate than not to vaccinate, but not enough to make a national recommendation. But they've also been very clear to say that their decision is based on things that they are qualified to look at, and they recognise that there are other factors that could harm the futures of children. And that is why they recommended that medical officers look at this, and then the four ministers, the Secretary of State and the devolved administration ministers, asked the four chief medical officers to look at this. We're being very careful.
Just very quickly on this, whatever you decide, can you assure parents that if there is a decision to vaccinate 12 to 15-year-olds, it will require parental consent?
I can give that assurance, absolutely.
Phillips also asked about the government's plans to introduce mandatory vaccine passports for large events.
So we are looking at, by the end of September, when everyone has had the opportunity to be fully vaccinated, for the large venues that could end up causing a real spike in infections, where we need to use the certification process. And if you look at what the FA have done, they've done so brilliantly in terms of checking vaccine status to reopen football. That is the sort of right thing to do. And we are absolutely on track to continue to make sure that we do that. And there's a reason for that, Trevor. The reason being is that I, as does the Prime Minister, want to make sure the whole economy remains open. The worst thing we can do for those venues is to have a sort of open-shut strategy, because we see infection rates rise because of the close interaction of people. That's how the virus spreads. If people are in close spaces in large numbers, we see spikes appearing. The best thing to do then is to work with the industry to make sure that they can open safely and sustainably in the long term. And the best way to do that is to check vaccine status.
On Times Radio, Paul Waugh interviewed the former Chancellor, Philip Hammond, who critiqued any potential rise in national insurance rates.
As a former Chancellor, you'll know more than most the complexities of funding social care. Do you think a national insurance rise is either desirable or workable as a solution?
No, I don't. And you're right. This has been a long running problem. To be frank with you, I was looking at this challenge when I was an opposition health spokesman nearly 20 years ago, and we haven't managed to solve it yet. This is an incredibly complex problem. But the issue is, an increase in national insurance contributions is asking young, working people, some of whom will never inherit a property, to subsidise older people who've accumulated wealth during their lifetime and have a property. And on any basis, that has got to be wrong.
Now, you'll famously, of course, know more than most about what it's like to propose a national insurance rise. You tried it on the self-employed in 2017. There was a backlash at the time. Do you think the backlash this time will make that look like child's play if the Chancellor goes ahead with a national insurance rise?
Yes, I do. I think that if the government were to go ahead with the proposed increase in national insurance contributions, breaking a manifesto commitment in order to underwrite the care costs of older people with homes, I think that would provoke a very significant backlash. I think it would cause the government, the Conservative Party, significant damage. I also think it's the wrong thing to do. It's not just about party political advantage. Economically, politically, expanding the state further in order to protect private assets by asking poor people to subsidise rich people has got to be the wrong thing to do.
Phillips interviewed the Shadow Foreign Secretary, Lisa Nandy, about the situation in Afghanistan, where it is estimated that there are hundreds, if not thousands, of British citizens waiting to be evacuated.
Should our government be talking to the Taliban, or should it be supporting Ahmed Massoud and the National Resistance Army in the Panjshir Valley? Can't do both.
I think we have to talk to the Taliban, and we've been urging the government for some time to have a dialogue with the Taliban. We have thousands of people still in Afghanistan, the Afghans who assisted us, but British nationals as well. Some of those cases are very, very complex. The Defence Secretary has been suggesting to MPs that they should, if they can, they should just try to get to the border, any border, and see if they can get across. But without safe passage, many of those people will simply not reach safety. We've got British nationals in wheelchairs, we've got children who've been separated from their parents, we've got somebody who's on dialysis. The truth is that if we want to uphold the promise and commitment that we made to our own citizens and to many Afghans who assisted us over recent decades, we've got to have a dialogue with the Taliban. We've got to ensure as a priority that safe passage across the country. We've got to be talking to the Taliban as well about the functioning airport and whether a country like Turkey or Qatar could somehow guarantee the safe passage of our citizens out of that airport. This is really pressing and urgent, and there is no choice at this current stage but to have a dialogue with the Taliban. That's different from diplomatic recognition, which would be far too premature to acknowledge, but dialogue is absolutely essential, and the government is right to have started that belatedly.
The former Prime Minister Gordon Brown told Phillips that the wealthy Western nations need to look again urgently at sharing their vaccine success with the rest of the world.
70% of the West has been vaccinated. Only 2% in Africa and actually in all the other low-income countries of the world. So 98% are unprotected. It's bad for them, it's bad for us, because the disease will come back to haunt us from Africa and hurt even the fully vaccinated here with new variants. But what I'm showing this morning is that there are hundreds of millions of unused vaccines that are either stored or are on order for delivery to Europe and America, including the United Kingdom, 300 million by the end of this month, 500 million by the end of October, a billion by the end of December, these vaccines could save thousands of lives in Africa. No issue we're talking about could save more lives than a policy decision by the richest countries that these surplus, unused, stockpiled stocks could actually go to the poorest countries who desperately need them to protect even the nurses and their health workers who remain unvaccinated against this disease.
And finally, Mar asked the Chief of the Defence Staff, General Sir Nick Carter, what the Taliban's victory in Afghanistan might mean for the UK.
One of the tests that we as an international community will absolutely hold on any future government in Afghanistan is the extent to which they are prepared to stop international terror being exported from Afghanistan. So that'll be something that everybody's watching very carefully.
Does that mean that we are more likely to have a terror attack? We are slightly less safe in this country because of what's happened?
A lot will depend on whether or not an effective government can be formed. If we end up with the sort of fracture that we suggested could happen when we talked last in July, then I think all bets are off. It'll critically depend upon effective government. And we all know, because we saw it tragically the week last week, that attack on the airport from Islamic State, Khorasan, that there are some really bad people out there. And the extent to which those bad people are able to flourish will very much depend upon whether the Taliban are able to form an effective government and an effective security structure to make sure that that terrorist threat doesn't get exported.
That's all for this week. I'm Isabel Hardman, and this podcast was produced by Matthew Taylor. Don't forget to subscribe to the Coffee House Shots podcast on the iTunes Store. And if you enjoyed this podcast, do subscribe to our daily Evening Blend email. It's a free roundup of all the political news each day, along with analysis and a diary on what to expect next. Just go to spectator.co.uk/eveningblend. Thanks for listening, and do join us again next week.